there's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.
And we are live. Welcome, folks, to episode 3709 of the Survival Podcast. I'll be bringing on my guest, Matt, the libertarian book designer, in just a bit. Matt is a really interesting guy. He's actually from Poland, and he has a company called Libertarian Book Designer. And he's done a lot of really great book design work for a lot of really great authors, including people like Larkin Rhodes and me. As well, though I kind of came as an after the fact because I had some problems that he was able to fix for me. So if you have the corrected version of Laws of Life, and if you have the original version that's all jacked up, and you look at them side by side, Matt's the guy that made the crappy thing into the good thing. So we'll have him on in just a moment to talk about that. I think this is a great topic, though, for us today for a variety of reasons. First and foremost, the Survival Podcast is, in fact, a lifestyle design podcast. Preparedness is just a big piece of that. We talk about everything from entrepreneurship to libertarian politics and everything in between. So with that in mind, you know, being able to actually monetize your knowledge is a really big piece of entrepreneurship. So there is always the fact that when you create a book, if you market it well enough, you can make some money on the book directly. But if you are a speaker, if you are a well-known business personality, et cetera, a book can also be a huge piece of credibility that goes on your, you know, your speaker CV and things like that as well. So it has multiple layers that it can actually benefit you from an entrepreneurial or business standpoint in addition to direct monetization. For instance, in the show notes for today, I mentioned one of my good friends, Michael Case, who wrote a book called Customer Devotion that I featured in the past on T-Spaz. He's built an entire, you know, post-career career on the concept of customer devotion in that book. He's a sought-after speaker and consultant. He's a professor at a university, a very prestigious one. And a lot of that goes back to, or is at least leveraged against, his authorship of a book. So I think there's a tremendous amount of value to a tremendous amount of the audience here in this. Before we go ahead and bring our guest Matt on, though, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. Sponsor of the day number one today is Jeff the Berkey Guy Gleason at usaberkeyfilters.com. Hey, water is life. I mean, there's a reason for the saying, and that is because it's true. It's also important that you're drinking the freshest, cleanest water at all times, not just when times get tough, but even if they don't. There's a lot of things in municipal water supplies you'd prefer not to be there. Some of them are put there intentionally, and sometimes it happens by accident. And usually when your municipality, your state, whatever, comes out and says, you should boil your water, there's been a problem already. There's already been a problem, which means you're already drinking the thing that is the problem. Yeah. Use a Berkey, that all goes away. And even as a, you know, I'm on a well. My well's 160 feet deep. It's in solid limestone. It's not going to get infected. I'm not worried about being infected with some sort of Giardia or Cryptosporidium or some crap like that. But honest to God, the water just tastes better out of the Berkey as well. So check them out today. And if you're going to get a Berkey and a Berkey filtration system, don't get it from Johnny Come Lately. Sell them at the gun show that, you know, picked up a contract like last week. Go with Jeff the Berkey Guy Gleason. We've been on air for 17 years. Jeff's been with us as long as anybody in the sponsorship crew ever. About 16 of those 17 years. So he ain't going anywhere. Check him out today. Jeff, the Berkey Guy, Gleason. Next up today, Start 9, Sovereign Computing. Hey, there's no cloud. What there is somebody else's computer. That means somebody else controls your data, access to your data, and it's a security risk to your data. Here's a little thing, right? You're not that important. There's not 100 hackers all over the world trying to figure out how to get into Bob's files. But there are plenty of hackers trying to figure out how to get into Google Drive or Amazon's file services or any of those things like that. That's where the money is. So by having your own encrypted stuff and then being one person, that's just an added layer of security plus privacy. You can access your files from anywhere in the world over the Tor browser, and that means that no one can see what you're looking at, even if it's just a picture of a cat or your Aunt Edna. It doesn't really matter. Plus, you can run apps that provide things like end-to-end encryption messaging that, you know, only the people you let in even have access to can even know that it's there, and a bunch of other stuff. And it's not hard. If you can put apps on a smartphone and use them, you can use Start9. Plus, you can run your own Bitcoin node, your own Bitcoin Lightning node, and even more. Learn more at Start9.com. And if you're an MSB member, you get 9% off all your purchases there. With that, I am excited to welcome our special guest today, Matt, the Libertarian Book Designer, man. Welcome to the show.
Hello, hello. Thank you very much for inviting me and giving me a chance to talk to you and to your audience.
Matt, can we start out with, like, how did you even end up in kind of this niche, doing this type of thing? Like, I'm sure when you were a little kid back in school, you're a lot like, when I grow up, I'm gonna format and design books in the libertarian world. Like, there had to be something that led you here.
Yes. Well, it did not happen right away, but you might say seeds of what I'm doing today were planted long time ago. So I always liked printed matter, mostly comic books. However, not be sufficient for me to niche into the libertarian books, libertarianism, and so on. What happened was that my father, starting probably late 80s, early 90s, was reading this, you might say, newspaper that was like conservative liberal, because I am Polish, so that in United States would be classical liberal.
Mm-hmm.
So I started reading that newspaper as well, and in one article, there was a word that I felt when I read it for the first time. I felt it described me quite well, meaning libertarian, because before that I did not know that word. But okay, and the article was not very, it wasn't, let's say, good article. The libertarianism was not being shown as this great philosophy, but from the description, it turned out for me, it was like, yeah, that's that pretty much describes me. So starting with that, I, at some point, when started artistic education, so things doing with pen, paper, ink and paper, at some point I was able to learn print, meaning like by hand, like woodcut, wood blocks of wood, printing ink and paper and so on. However, I wanted to do something that was more, less artistic, more technical. So, in a way, my, let's say, fascination with comic books then came together, in the form of, well, book reading and at some point book designing. Because many times I know that many people do start off their journey with Ayn Rand's books. That was harder for me because they had to be translated at that mm-hmm. point. Late 90s, I still could not read this kind of advanced material in English in original all that well. However, after reading the translation of Atlas Shrugged for, like, I don't know, it was 2 months of summer. I just was sitting on my behind and reading, and it was a very, you might say, inspiring. So, and because of, it was a book, it was probably, there was an audiobook on a audio cassette somewhere there, but it was the physical book, and that medium really made me appreciate the material. The printed word on a page, I think, was great. Allowed me to stop, think about what I've just read, maybe reread something. This physical item, which is printed book on its own, it's like a great, one of the greatest invention in human history, because you are able to convey information, ideas over the centuries, actually. You don't need electricity to read a book. All you need is some source of light, preferably sunlight, ability to read, and this physical book that is like a self-contained reader and in one for Kindle reader. You need electrical energy. It goes mm-hmm. away. You're not reading anything. But with physical book, you might be in the middle of the woods for months, and you can read. And so at some point, I started to try to design things that are more useful, meaning art. Okay, art is pretty, but I wanted something to be useful, just like a book. It has purpose outside of itself. So slowly but surely, I was trying to get some customers to work with, and I was able to for many years now. There's one publisher that I've been working with and designing books for, small publishing company, and because, well, Polish market is not very big and might say not very diverse, so everything libertarian wise, if you have any type of publishing that way, already taken by others. So because I can speak English reasonably well and read, I was able to reach out to English speaking customers. And because I am libertarian, I do understand libertarians, it's much easier for me to try and come up with ideas and to know the target market than if it was like fishing, maybe car repair. That's not my thing. I do not know anything about those things. I do know about libertarianism. So I am able to offer like good service regarding that type of content.
Gotcha. Can you talk to people about why, if they're looking at possibly putting out a book, they would want to use something like KDP versus traditional publishing?
Well, KDP is great thing for people who would like to publish their own work, but do not want to, you know, go to traditional publisher that would involve working with agent and so on. Meaning, it does require effort and of course, funding and so on. But also, let's say if you are popular through traditional publishing, the amount of money that the publisher gets from you is quite a bit higher than otherwise Amazon would get from you. Because traditional publishing, let's say if you want to publish a book, you have to have a stock. I think that's how you say it. So you have, in order to release a book, you have to have however many copies printed so we can send them to the bookstores and so on. Let's say people that pre-ordered, however, go KDP route, you actually are able to avoid most of the middlemen. That's one thing, because you are your own publisher in a way. You're responsible for writing the book, editing, formatting, cover design, the listing. And then whenever, you don't have to have like a stock of books printed ahead of time, 1,000, 5,000, 10,000 books, because Amazon offers this print on demand option, which means you create a listing on Amazon. Somebody wants to buy your book. They click buy, and then and only then there is one of your book printed. So no more storing books somewhere where they, okay, if they get sold, great, but if they don't, wasted money on a very expensive scrap paper.
And one thing I did learn, thanks to your help, is that it's not completely print on demand. And it may have to do with, if you drop a book and you get a bunch of orders, maybe they surplus print for a while. Because the corrected version you did for me took almost a month not to be approved, to start showing up when you ordered books. I was ordering like a book every 4 days at author price. And then finally, I'm like, yes, it finally is corrected, because I totally screwed things. And so I owe you a big debt of gratitude for helping me fix that. But just, that was one of the things I learned. I thought that's exact, like you order one book, they print one book. And apparently, I don't know, maybe if you're a completely unknown author and you don't get any orders, maybe it works that way. But it took about 30 days to flush out whatever surplus inventory they created. But that might be because we did so well out of the gate.
I think you're correct. It's probably when Amazon sees that your book is popular, they do make a little bit of surplus. So whenever somebody buys it, it gets to them faster, as opposed to like a book that, well, there's one copy sold, two copies, so they are printed then and there because they are not very popular and there's no point of being the inventory.
And there is a financial advantage, because like I know I'm making per book a little over $6 a book, and that's on Kindle and on print. And I know contemporaries that have traditional publishers, and there are some nice things that come with it. You know, they have a publicist that gets them booked on podcasts and interviews on the radio and stuff like that and all. But they're making, some of them, selling a book at almost the same price point are making a little under a dollar a book. Now, that's a 6x reduction in the wrong direction. And one of the things I think people that are, you know, want to be authors, especially people who are like influencers, podcasters, whatever, that have an audience they can sell into, if you get a publicist, that's what they're leveraging. They're leveraging your ability to sell books without them. And then hopefully they can leverage it into larger sales for you. But, you know, if you're a Jack Spirko level person, they're probably not going that far out of their way. I could have had a publisher. I mean, if I wanted one, I could have had, you know, like a second tier publisher. It wouldn't have been a Simon and Schuster, but it, you know, I could have had somebody that's probably based in New York or something. And it did not economically make sense to me to do it that way.
Yes, that's one thing. But the other thing is, well, you have big audience.
Mm-hmm.
If you are just like a regular Joe that just wants to publish his own memoir and has really no following whatsoever, I don't think that a regular publisher would want to work with them because no. They do not have something that's interesting to their audience. Well, on Amazon, yeah, let's publish it. No problem. Let's do it. It might be what is called a dead book, so zero sales,
Yeah. Completely
invisible, but it's still available. Somebody might buy it.
And it all comes down to marketing at that point. Like you're your own marketing agency. What do you think should be done by a professional when you're publishing on KDP? I would submit that typesetting would be a big part of that. Based on my personal experience and having some, like what you cost to have you do the work of like jacket design and typesetting would have saved me a ton of time, and time is money. Like it was, if I knew that was your cost and the work you did, I wouldn't even have touched it. I would have been like, here, bro, here's this and here's a few $100 and let me know when you're done.
That's what I do. So, well, when you're publishing on Amazon, you can do everything yourself, very much DIY. Should you? I don't think so. That's why I'm here. But while you are able to have reasonably good results with formatting using templates from Word, that's fine. Book cover using Canva, that's okay. But editing needs to be done, in my opinion, by a professional. And I am a designer saying this. Editing needs to be done by a professional.
And that's not what you, just for everybody listening, if they decide they want to go this route, you can help them, but that's not what you help them.
Yeah. What I do, well, let's say you have a book that did not write your book over the weekend. You probably did not write your book over a month. It might be years. So now, do you want it to look like it came out of copy shop? Probably not. It would be much better if this book was actually easy to read in a situation like you have a page of text. It can be very, let's say, fancy font, very busy, might even look pretty. However, it does not convey the message well. It goes in front of the message, obscures the message in a worst case scenario. Same with very ugly font, very ugly.
Just keep rolling. Layout. I'm going to go grab two copies of my book and I can show this while you're talking about it, but just go ahead and roll.
Yeah, go ahead. So the problem is with DIY, designing book layout and book cover, there are many things that are hard to do and regular people. Everybody can do them. However, they need to learn. They need to invest time to be able to, do reasonably good layout of a book. Even in Word. Word offers, or LibreOffice, if you want to go that route, which I do. However, I have to use Word as well. They offer templates. The software offers templates that is quite, the templates are quite nice. They are applied consistently. And if you know how to do it, you can get quite good results. However, you still need to learn and you need to invest time. A lot of frustration sometimes to learn. And then the result still will not look as well as it would if professional done it, because I have published some books. In the meantime, I do publish public domain content with my own spin on it. And I have a template prepared for me, not by me, for me in Word. And I can attest that does work, but looks amateurish in my opinion.
Agreed.
Unless I really put in the work for it to look as good as possible in Word, and still it will not look as good as if I work, because I work in InDesign, because there are no options, no tools advanced typographic tools that would allow me to adjust the text so it does what I needed to do, even hyphenation.
Yeah, let me see if, I don't know how well this will show up on a screen here, but this is...
The old one?
This is the old, yeah, he doesn't have to look at it very hard. You don't really need to read it. Just, if you look at the way the text lies, how the margins are not clean, and how there's different spacing between the lines. And this was done with the template that KDP provides. He's got, yeah, right. And then this is after he got done with it, right? If you just look at when he's saying it's more professional, it's not even close. This looks like what you would expect. There were some other problems in the book that were mine, but the formatting was something I just couldn't fix. And one thing I'll say for Matt is like, I'll turn this around this week. And I'm like, you sure? He's like, yep. And boom. And it was like, wow. Like, if I knew how easy, how good, how fast, and how affordable it was, like I said, I would have touched it. Like, as I'm writing my second book right now, there's certain things when I go, I'm not going to even worry about it, right? I mean, it has to say it right, it has to be punctuated right, all that. But as far as exactly how it's going to be formatted, I'm not going to sit around and jack around with it because I know that you're going to make it look good anyway. So why am I going to waste a moment with it other than you need to know that I want that headline bolted? That's all you need to know when you look at it, and you'll make it look good. And I really encourage anybody out there that's thinking about writing a book, use somebody like Matt for that piece of it, because it's not that much money. And, you know, unless you value your time at minimum wage, you're going to waste money by wasting time. That's how I feel after doing this now.
Exactly, because as I have mentioned before, actually everybody is able to learn it, but I do not want to fix my own car. I can do it. I can learn this and that. What does this do? But I don't have time for this.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and there's a thing that's true. Like, if you do something every day, you get really good at it and you get really fast at it. So you can charge for it and still cost the person less in the end because you're a professional. It's the old story about like the plumber comes to the house and he looks at it and bangs on the pipe and tightens one thing and turns the water on and everything works. And then the guy's complaining about the bill, and it's like, I can put it back, right? It's not how long it took me to do it. It's that I knew where to bang. I knew what to tighten. And I fixed your shit, and it cost me to come to your house. Or I can put it back, right? Nobody ever wants it put back. Everybody ends up paying the plumber the bill because the plumber knew how to fix the problem. And they knew how to fix the problem because they've seen that problem 100 times. And you never saw it before, and what you're paying for is that expertise.
Exactly. So let's say this is a recent, recent development. So there's this EU directive about accessibility, which probably does affect Amazon users because Amazon is global market, so it does have websites on Germany, France, UK, Poland, yep. And so on. So the accessibility directive requires this digital material, meaning like websites, but I'm interested in electronic publications to have these requirements fulfilled. So there's things for screen readers that are now mandatory to be observed. Ebook file has to have its language declared. There's plenty of information, additional information that is now mandatory that most people have no idea about. I only know about it because this is part of my job, but maybe the way that your book, even if you publish it on Amazon and make it available worldwide, might not be available in Europe because it does not fulfill the requirement of accessibility.
And I'm
not sure.
Again, I mean, I'm looking right now, I've got .UK. I'm looking at my actual royalties from last month. .FR, I'm not sure who that is, but .UK, definitely .DE, mm-hmm. right? .AU, .JP. So some of that's Europe. I mean, AU is obviously Australia, but any regulations Europe has, either Australia either has two or has more or will have anyway. So yeah, it's I never really thought about like the accessibility issues either opening or closing markets. And that's probably a decision Amazon would make without you even knowing it other than, hey, you're just not there.
Yeah. It does not concern printed book because, yeah. Well, on printed book, you don't have like alt text for images or anything like that. However, ebooks is a different matter because ebook, technically, it's just a zipped set of HTML files. It's a zipped set of websites that it's being read by your computer or ebook reader, and that's it. So they are very similar under the hood, and probably every regulation that would target the websites in general would target ebooks as well.
Yeah, yeah. Are there any free tools people can use to do some of this design work themselves?
Absolutely. There's LibreOffice, which is a text editor that would allow you to, if you use the templates and styles and so on, which you have to learn, but it would allow you to create reasonably good-looking page layout, meaning for, like, say, book like yours or a novel, something like that, that isn't a thing that has, like, say, many pictures or graphs, these kinds of stuff. LibreOffice would work quite well. And I know that I never asked you about it, but when you published your book at first, did you upload the Word document or PDF?
I did a Word document, which I think was a mistake. And I think my biggest mistake, just for people listening that are going to go the full do-it-yourself route, is I write on a Mac. And so I had to convert the Pages document into a DocX, and I think that played part of a role in it. I also was unaware that when I did an export and kept editing, I was editing a different file, and that the mother file, so to say, was being left as it was. So I learned a lot about system compatibility and typesetting mistakes, I guess. I mean, like, I learned how not to do shit by doing this. But
That's how I learned.
You usually learn how to do something by doing it poorly first. I have this conversation with my grandkids all the time, especially my granddaughter, because she's 9 and she's at a stage where she wants everything to just work. And I'm like, literally everything you're good at, you sucked at first. She's like super high level, like competing at national level in gymnastics already at 9. And I'm like, the first time you try to do a freaking somersault, you sucked. She's playing competitive softball already. It's like the first time you tried to hit a ball with a bat, you couldn't do it. You have to suck first. But in some things, it probably would make sense to like just don't, like, I'm not going to edit books for a living. I'm not good at it. I'm not going to design graphics for a living. I'm not going to do typesetting for a living. And so to me, those are the carve outs. Like, is it worth learning? Maybe. But if you're not going to do it frequently, not only, I think there's two issues. One, you first have to learn to do it right. But I also think that there is a competency that is maintained through, like, it's muscle memory is not the right word here, but it kind of is, that by doing it frequently, you stay good at it. You can learn something and be really good at it, but if you don't do it for a long time, you'll stop being good at it, if that makes sense.
I do agree, absolutely. So I could learn to design websites, but I won't. Because there are other people that I will pay to do it for me.
Yeah, makes sense. Makes sense.
So one tip about what happened at first to your book. While Amazon allows it, not upload the Word file. Okay. Upload, export PDF from whichever application you use and upload the PDF. Because PDF, during its inception, was thought as this portable document format. So almost as you have printed page in your computer.
Correct.
So what you see is what you get, because Word, you can, if you resize, let's say, window, it will probably, I'm not sure, but it will probably...
You're going, and it absolutely does, because all of a sudden the table of contents didn't work anymore, right? So yeah. What you're saying is you upload a book that you thought was 267 pages, and it's 288 pages. Now, okay. How that works when it's their template, I don't know, but I just know don't do that, right? There's a point where I'm not going to worry about why it screws up. If there's a method to use where it just won't, and the PDF functionality is deaf, and I get what you're saying. Like, it's like you digitally print it, I guess, is a way to see it. So it will look exactly as it does in the document and the print at the same time, which was the whole purpose of PDF in the beginning. And that's why back in the day, if you put in click here on Google, it went right to Adobe, because every website had click here to download Adobe, and click here was anchor link. Yes. So it became the default. Like, that was the way we used to teach SEO. Like, this is why the link's more important than the content, because there was no click or here on the on the PDF page. But every search engine, the first rank for click here was Adobe PDF Reader.
Yeah, makes sense. Makes sense.
Yeah. So are there maybe some paid tools that people might use in the design process if they're going the DIY route, or at least partially the DIY route?
So, of course, there's Adobe.
Yeah.
And you can get reasonably results, but you have to pay Adobe.
Yeah.
Hate. However, there are alternatives. So there's Affinity that it stemmed from Adobe Apple War, that there is a set of applications that are in direct competition to Adobe software, so DeFoto, Photoshop, Affinity Designers, Illustrator, and Affinity Publisher as direct competitor to InDesign, which is for page layouts. And they have quite nice templates and so on. There's still a curve, a learning curve that go through. However, they are cheap, $45 for each application you pay once. It's not subscription. So that's great. There always have been Corel, so Corel Draw and so on. The results are not great, but it's more or less reliable. I did try many years ago to do a magazine layout in Corel. It was a pain. It's not right to for the job, but you can try it. There's a free.
What is it you said that you use? You use InDesign? Is that what you said?
Yes, Adobe InDesign. And I hate Adobe's subscription model with passion, because it used to be that you could just buy a set of applications and, well, you really own it. However, you paid once, and now you pay every month through the nose. And they will punish you if you want to quit.
So it sounds like you have like a love-hate with them. Are you thinking about using something different in the future because of that? Or do they just have you locked? Like, you try to get out, and they pulled you back in like Pacino, man.
I would like to. I have hopes for Affinity. However, they are still not there yet because, unfortunately or fortunately, Adobe in their InDesign software has plenty of automations like grep, so regular expressions that saves me so much of work. It's like a very advanced find and replace, which allows me to shorten the time I need work design. I don't know how many times over, but I used to use many years ago very early versions of InDesign, and while the result was quite nice, always required plenty of workarounds and this kind of stuff. Currently, it's very, very easy to do, make your design look well, work well, and it is a love-hate relationship.
Actually. Gotcha.
And I hope that Affinity will catch up with the automations as well, because this is the part of the lack of automations that I need to work efficiently with text. It prohibits me from switching from design to publisher, so from Adobe to, unfortunately. It will come, I hope, but it's not there yet, so.
Okay. So let's talk about, for the author, right, if they're getting their manuscript ready, they want to publish a book, and they're going to send that off to somebody like you to do cover design, typesetting, and formatting. What should they do to prepare the manuscript so it's in a best-suited situation for you? And let me say that I think that using the same person for that piece and the jacket design makes a lot of sense, because the jacket is going to have a spine width that's going to be directly dependent on the final page count. And I'll just say from experience, it can be frustrating trying to do it yourself when the template changed the page count and you don't know why the jacket is a millimeter too big. That was really aggravating. So again, everything would have been shortcut, but is there, like, as I'm writing book two, and I'm going to have you do the work for me when it's ready, is there anything I should be doing to make sure that that manuscript is properly prepared for you when I turn it over?
Yes, so there's plenty of done ahead. You have to be.
Okay.
However, they are speed up my work. So whenever you write, let's say in Word, you have many people don't use it, but you have a set of styles that you can apply to text.
Okay.
So there's normal style, heading this, heading that. Many times it happens that you apply a style to a text, let's say because you want nice big bolded heading, but then you change something. So this style is modified and you have different styles for body text because you did grab something from the website, pasted it. So that text that has already style applied on the website, many times it comes into the document. You're writing in English, but you take some also English text, but from the French website. It can apply French dictionary to English text, which makes it like you have red underline saying, okay, this everything is wrong, despite it not being wrong. It just wrong dictionary being used. So,
I got you. When I used to work with Neil, like optimization, the British spell it differently. And we would have constant internal arguments over how it should be spelled. And it's like, but we're a British company, but we have an American customer, like stuff like that. Yeah,
exactly. So that document should be as clean as possible, meaning as far as the styles are applied, or let's say no double spaces. I know that this does happen, that after a dot and when you start a new sentence, you have...
Oh, you're going to hate me. Double spacing after a period. If you learn to type in the 80s, that's it. It's not...
I know. However, that's part of the automation that takes care of that.
Yeah.
That's
okay.
One of the beautiful things in InDesign. I can do one click and it all goes away.
Okay.
Which saves me a lot of time. I do not have to manually try and search for those. However, I think most important thing is for me to get already edited text. So text from the editor. Because if I get, let's say, like a rough sketch of the book from the author, I will have to change it again. Then again, I will have to do it anyway after, let's say, a typesetting. I send it back to the author. Author gives it to the editor. Okay, let's change this to that, because you've read it like 5 times, 10 times. When it's done on a, the layout is different, meaning like you've been looking at the same Word document for however many tens of hours, long time, but different fonts, different page, and it starts looking different. The words are in different places. You're not used to the words being in different places than they are now.
Okay.
So it becomes, again, fresh, and you can start seeing more things that could be adjusted. But when I get this text from the author that is actually properly edited, it will shorten the time that we have to spend working on it. There's less adjusting, less error corrections, and it can go out faster.
I got you. So what should people look for when they're searching for a designer? Obviously, they should just use you, but maybe they'll use somebody else. Like what would, if you reverse the situation, knowing what you know about doing design work and you were the author, what would you look for in someone to do design, typesetting, final output work for you?
Well, for sure. Every designer has a style, you might say. So you have people that only do the fantasy covers, like with beautiful, almost painting-like illustrations. There are people that more of a typographic style, meaning heavy use of lettering, not much photo manipulation. So it is good to have in mind that, one thing, what type of book you actually want to publish, meaning is it like a novel? Is it like a book about finances? Is it like a chemistry textbook? This does matter for how it looks like. And I'm talking about the cover now. But then inside this, let's say, set of inside this content styles that can be used for design. So it's good for the author to supply the designs that they like. Hey, I like this because I like green. I like this because I think this type of illustration would work well. It might not, but there's the beginning of the conversation about what can be done, what should be done for this book design. Similar with the interior, that's less. There is actually less design. Let's say design wise, you have to have letters. You have to be able to read text. They cannot be like old Norse runes and so on. So you have to have readable text. However, there's also design style to what is done inside. So you have penguin books, let's say. I bought a book about COVID statistics. It's penguin, so I did not really care to read it, but I bought it for design. Inside, the tables were done very, let's say, very minimalistically, but still very well designed and correspond with overall book design and with the text. So you can take a table about, let's say, US budget for however many years, copy it from Excel, put it into the book. Okay, there's a table, but it probably will not look good. So this information needs to be also designed in some way. It is much more restricted than, let's say, book cover design, but still, inside also, the authors of how the inside look also counts a lot. Because I get a book from designer that maybe it's well designed, but I don't like it for whatever reason. Okay, we did miscommunicate somewhere.
What is your advice on the type of printing to use in the production of a book? And I guess that might go back again to what kind of book we're talking about. Like the stuff that I'll probably always write is going to be very print heavy. There's not a single illustration in my book. It's all print. It's written word. And I guess that might have something to do with that, choosing your print type. But what are your thoughts on that?
Exactly. So, Amazon gives you this limited option of print, you might say. It is for like mainly novels, this type of content. But if you want to print nicely looking photos, it's not the way to go. Meaning there are other services that offer print on demand. They do not have Amazon's reach. They do not have the market, but they offer good products. So let's say one of many things I did design is magazine called Libertarians Who Make Art, and I did design the online version and printed version as well, meaning like electronic version PDF. And this is quite image heavy. So we have photos of musicians, you have book covers, you have paintings, you have let's say sculptures like movie shots. And the background is black, the text is white, because there's way less text than in a book. And that was printed on Lulu. I ordered copies, and Lulu is, with that type of material, is very good. The quality, its photos are crisp. The black on the page is uniform, and it's very, very rich, as opposed to Amazon, because there was a test print done on Amazon.
Okay.
And it's not even so-called premium color from Amazon. It's no good at all for this type of content. So you have to, when creating a book, let's say I want to create a photo book, meaning like a memoir from my being in England, and it's mostly photos, some text, and that's it. So I know that Amazon is not a great place to print this type of book. So the very beginning with...
And just do us a favor, don't drift off your mic. You cut out.
Sorry.
Yes, keep your gate close. Go ahead. Yeah.
So at the very beginning, this is one of the things that author should be aware of, should be made aware of by me or any other designer, like, okay, you want to print photo book on Amazon? That's not a great idea. We have to find another solution.
Okay. That's interesting. I didn't even know Lulu was still around. I actually co-authored a book 20 years ago with Neil Franklin that we published on Lulu. I thought they were absorbed into KDP, but I've got them up on the screen right now. So that kind of leads me to my next question anyway. Like, I kind of marketed this show as using KDP because it's the biggest, the most popular, and probably for some people the easiest. But they're not the only game in town when it comes to this type of publishing, are they? Obviously, Lulu's still around. I thought, for some reason in my head, I know the dude from Red Hat founded them, but I thought Amazon bought them and absorbed them, but I guess not.
I guess not. Yeah. I never used Lulu outside of this one print of the magazine because I was not really aware of them. While it's print on demand, still it's not the Amazon market, meaning because, well, Amazon is so much more than just that. On the other hand, coming from also from print background, I did use other services, but not Lulu. Before that, I thought that Lulu is exclusively American, but apparently not, because it printed thing for me here and delivered it. So, like, okay, they have this international reach.
Yeah. Is there anybody other than Lulu in the game still then, other than Amazon and them? Is there anybody else?
Well, there's Ingram Spark. There are things like Book Baby. Oh, apparently Barnes and Noble have their print-on-demand part, but I have only recently found out about it. So I do not know what that is, what their offer is. And that would be, I think, exclusively in the U.S.
Huh. I just noticed on, like, that's our book from, I guess 2007 or 6 that Neil and I wrote. And it's still for sale on Lulu. I wonder where the, if anybody actually buys the damn thing, I wonder where the money goes.
Exactly.
Because the company that we used to publish the book back then, we had an LLC between us, that was ended when he went back to England. So I don't know if anybody buys it. I guess it goes off into the ether. Lulu keeps it. That's kind of cool though. Like, as a flashback for me, that book still, that's actually kind of cool. You could still get a copy of it. That's kind of cool.
Well, that's one thing, but it might be similar to like dead books on Amazon. Nobody buys it. It's available, but nobody buys it. Nobody pays.
Yeah. Yeah. What are your thoughts on you call printed proof copies? What do you mean by that, and what is that all about?
So whenever you get printed on KDP, you can order like author's copy. So you just pay for printing and shipping. You do not pay this Amazon's overhead. So they come with
a watermark.
Watermark.
Yeah.
And what it allows you to is to take the physical item into your hands to more or less see how it's going to look like in your customer's hands, which is very important. So let's say on this one, it might look fine, but only when you get a printed item, you can see if there are some adjustments that need to be made. So I did plenty of those. Let's say I've got a coloring book that me and my partner made. And on screen, it's great. However, the imperfection of Amazon's print causes, let's say, sometimes the book to be cut not exactly right. So the text is too close to the edge. Even on a previewer, it looks fine. Turns out the text is too close to the edge. Or when you open the book, the text is too close to the middle and you have to open it wider to actually read the text. So when you look on the screen, it's flat, it's fine. However, when you get this book in your hand, you see how it you might say feels, how easy it is to read. If it if you have to look around the edges to read anything, it's if anything's cut away. And that's very, I think, very good investment, because when it's already, let's say, it's already sold, printed, in customers' hands, and they get product that it's really not great quality, your Amazon review might kick you in the behind.
Yeah.
Just for that.
Yeah. There is an interesting thing you kind of hit on there too, though. Like the author copy before you approve it and all, that's great. But like, I just looked it up to be sure I had the price right. So I can order now that it's, you know, proper and it's shipping and it's all good. I can order copies of this book for author copies without that watermark now, because we're past that stage, for about $4.20 a book. I wish it was $4.20. $4.19. It just feels like it should be $4.20. It just feels like it should. Anyway, $4.19. But, you know, the book sells for $17.95. Well, that means that if I'm going to a place where I'm going to be speaking and I want to sell my books, that means if I want to directly sell my books and inventory some myself on a website, if I want to do autograph copies, a limited run of autograph copies or whatever, I can effectively buy these for under $5. And I can make, let's say, $10, or if I add some sort of additional thing like an autograph or something like that, you know, maybe even more, I can make additional money because I now have access to this. And the fact that I could order this for myself for $4.19, that actually seems like a pretty damn solid deal. And you realize, like, the fact that they can do that, that's, they have to be still making something on that, or they wouldn't do it, right? That's why they're the 800-pound gorilla, because they have so much quantity, so much economy of scale, that they really do own the market. There's some things I don't like about them, but I, you know, I'm not the data-driven company Amazon is. Like, one of the things I don't like, my Kindle version is priced at $9.99. I'd like to push the gap between the physical and the electronic closer. If I charge $10 or more, my royalty on the Kindle goes in half. So they know they want those Kindles $9.99 and under. And that's what they want, and they'll push you. Like, I would have to double the price of the Kindle and exceed the price of the hard copy to make the same money on it. And it's very clear that some propeller-headed engineer, accountant of some kind figured that out for a reason. And there's some other things like that. Like, there's a price ceiling on the audiobooks too, where if you go over it, it works against you. But again, they can do it because where else can I get, I don't know how many pages this damn thing is now, 270 odd pages printed for $4. Like, that's,
yes,
you know, with nice jacket, good paper. I mean, it's very well done. And to be able to do something like that at a price is kind of insane. If you go back before we had this and authors self-published, they would have to order like a minimum case of like 1,000 books. And you're going back 25 years and you weren't getting them for $4.
No.
Right? And then you're talking about 1990s money. So, you know, it would be, if you were paying $10 a book back then or $8 a book, it'd be like paying $25.30 today. So it really is an amazing program, even if you want to sell most of your books in real life, because where else are you going to be able to get a book that's almost 300 pages printed for $4? You damn sure ain't doing it on your home computer printer. It won't look good anyway, but I mean, you kind of get my point. Like, even a, like, if you were doing something internal in a company and you wanted every new employee to have like a book that is like the history and culture of the company, you can't do better than the price point. It's really kind of crazy when you think about it.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. And there's, let's say, I here in UK, I can order these proof copies. However, I cannot, for some reason, maybe that changed, I cannot do it in Poland.
Okay.
Because there's Polish market, but they will not sell me proof copy. However, I can order author copy with very similarly priced. And yeah, that they will allow that. So the... This is a great thing that Amazon allows us to do it.
Yeah. Do you want to tell people more about your company as well?
It's not as much as a company. It's like
a service.
I do have company. However, my company is like a general book design.
Okay. The
Libertarian Book Designer is, well, a website. It's a... This part of my offer facing specifically libertarians, free market people, voluntarists, agorists, this kind of stuff. Because it's just me. There's no one else. However, I decided to create this, you might say, offer to show people, hey, I do get you. I know how you're thinking. Many of you, most of you. I'm one of you. So what you can, what I can do is really try to make your book fly. If you pay me, well, you're supporting another libertarian, you might say. Yeah. But I do, it's not, as I said, it is a topic that I am well versed in, you might say. It's not, as I have mentioned, it's not fishing, or even if I try to do something like painting albums, it's different kind of stuff. I'm not specialized in, I have some knowledge in, but libertarianism is where I have experience, I have knowledge. So connecting these two things, libertarianism is and books, it's quite natural to me. And then because of that, I am better able to help the authors because I do know the, let's say, the topic more or less.
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you that I think your pricing is incredibly fair. I will not even think about doing any of the work myself ever again. I just won't. Like, it doesn't make sense for me to spend, you know, hours on something that I can get done for a few hundred dollars. It just doesn't. And the work you do is honestly, is fantastic. You know, I mean, like, the fact that Larkin Rose used you says a huge thing in of itself, but I've been incredibly impressed with the speed and the quality.
If I may, about Larkin, it's actually Shepherd the voluntarist that I worked with. I did not work directly with Larkin. However, Shepherd talked to me. We did work together and did the covers for Larkin's
book. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Cool. That sets us something too, that you would even make that distinction. It's probably unnecessary, but it says something about integrity. So guys, definitely is the kind of guy that you can go to if you want to do this. And again, here's this pricing here. Ebook $200, printed book and ebook $400, printed book $300. So there could be some, who knows what you want done, but a basic book, you're in that range.
Yeah.
And I mean, that pricing is like printed book and ebook cover design, printed book and ebook interior layout, 3D cover mockup, and flat cover JPEG and source files.
Yeah. Right?
That's what you need. And I'm assuming that that kind of pricing would be for someone writing a book about like mine. It's pretty straightforward. It's all text. You know what you need. I have at least a cover concept, and you maybe recreate it or improve it, and you send me back the files, and I do everything else. And $400, bro, that's – I don't want to use a profane word here, cheap, because I hate the word cheap, but it's an incredible value is the way that I would put it for the work that I got done. I'm going to have links to all the resources you gave me in the show notes today, but you had some stuff down here. Was there anything down here you wanted me to bring up on the screen for you in particular? Like, I don't know what this is. That's the wrong one. Let me remove that and let me add. Why won't this go? There we go. Is it 10 points only? Is that anything to do with us?
Yes. Well,
it was supposed to be tenants, but somebody changed it.
Maybe. However, this is why you need a designer. This is because, okay, what's about those ants? No, it's tenants. However, these are, in a funny way, it shows that you should have used professional.
Yeah, yeah. 10 ants only can park here, not tenants. Exactly. 10 ants. I thought maybe it was a joke that had something to do with our affinity for the ant being prepared.
No, no.
And I don't. This is a drink menu, so what am
Similar
I?
Similar here.
It, yeah, yeah. Le Ong Black. Okay. Yeah. Ka, ka, pa, ka, ap, pushino, neno, maka. I can't even read that one. That's a real sign in like a real shop.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't do that.
And now screen reader has to deal with that for like a blind person trying to read a book and they cannot.
Oh, wow. This one I can't even be. It's
yeah,
like,
exactly.
It's like 10 words, but they all read like one word. It's like when you use the Annie decoder ring in the Christmas movie. And then you have to figure out where the words are. And then there's, you know, the best book you've ever designed.
Exactly.
Version of it, right?
Yeah. With the cover done by one and only Jack Spirko.
Yeah, yeah. So, ChatGPT did that cover. You fixed it.
So what we have here on the left is the original file, meaning it's the JPEG before printing. On right hand is printed cover. I put them together. So you have to be aware, meaning anyone that actually tries to sell a book, that after printing, it will look a little bit different.
And even here, where his fixed version, there's just a little subtle difference in the actual output. And I think this is the good one. It's a little, actually like it a little better. It's a little tiny bit lighter. But it definitely kept what I was trying to get out of it and improved it. So, man, this has been great. I think there's a lot of people in the audience that have kicked this idea around. And I don't think there's anything holding anybody back from writing a book today other than the fact that it's a lot of work. I mean, I will tell you that. It's a lot of work. But if you're worried about it, like, how do I make it look good and all? You don't. That's not what you do. If you're an author, be an author. Let somebody like Matt help you. And I guess the best way for people to get in touch with you is just through your website.
Yes, yes. This is the best because, well, I do not have for the website for the Libertarian Book Designer. I do not really at this point have any other online presence. I do not have social media for that.
Yeah.
And email is always the best.
Okay. Which is hello at thelibertarianbookdesigner.com, right?
Yes, it is.
So guys, if you've been thinking about getting a book done, and, you know, let's bring up one thing here, like, you're the Libertarian Book Designer, but, like, my book's not a libertarian thesis, and you did a great job with it. So I guess, like, anybody in that realm, it doesn't have to be, like, the next great libertarian manifesto that somebody's writing.
No, it can be, like, a science fiction book. It can be a cookbook.
Yeah.
It can be something like a memoir, whatever. But because I am a libertarian myself, I do understand the audience.
Well, hey, man, I appreciate you being with us today. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much. Highly appreciate it. This was great. And I'm very thankful that I was able to talk to you and to your audience.
So Missile Launch said that sign that you had in the parking lot, the one with the words all crammed together. He said, I see that sign and then I go home because I think I had a stroke. I think that's a point well made. Matt, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye.
All right, guys, real quick, I want to wrap up. Like I said, I think that writing a book is a lot of work. And it's totally worth it at the same time. What it can do for you from a business standpoint, like a pure business standpoint, you know, I'll put it this way. I've started to think more and more in how I design recurring revenue in my business and in my life, like from a retirement viewpoint. And so if I can write a book that even were to make me a very small amount of money, relatively speaking, let's say a few hundred dollars, a couple hundred dollars a month, something like that. You need about $45,000 to $50,000 in the bank to have a safe investment, like a laddered CD or something that's spitting that amount of money out. So whether it's a book or all the other things we talk about building, the things that you can build into your life that are truly passive income have a value beyond what we measure in just the direct income. They, because they're providing that function. Then the other thing, like I said, if you are, you don't have to be a speaker or a podcaster to benefit from having a book. My friend Mike Case, his book on customer appreciation, you know, it landed him practically a job as a college professor. It was like the tipping point thing. Anything that establishes you a thought leader in your space is incredibly valuable. If you are in any space where you're doing outreach marketing, and if you're in business, you should be, it's just another feather in the cap. It's another thing that you have. So there's a lot going on with the publishing of books. And I look at what's going on today with self-publishing a lot like the Gutenberg press back in the day, right? Like when we didn't have printing presses, we had scribes, and like only special people could read and write back then, right? You had to be trained to do it. And then if you had a book and you wanted a copy of this book, somebody had to sit down and, like an artist, do calligraphy and make a copy of the book. And then there were two. And then a scribe could make a third and a fourth. And, you know, a scribe could only make so many books in their life. And then the printing press came. And when the printing press came, it changed everything. And there were a lot of people that didn't freaking like the fact that the printing press came because, well, the poors are going to have access to the knowledge now, right? But yet, there was still a lot of manual labor in producing a book. Sure, one person could now produce a couple hundred a day, and then with mechanization, eventually thousands a day could be produced. But there was still all the little dealy-whoppers. And then to actually get the book to somebody, the publishers came. And then the new gatekeepers came, and then it became like, you get to be an author, and you don't. Because we don't like what you have to say, or we don't like the way that you're saying it. Today, we have completely and fully democratized publishing. Anybody anywhere can produce anything and publish it. And there is, let me tell you, somebody that's been on the internet for 17 years now, just as a podcaster, there is a value in having a physical product that you can put in somebody's hand beyond a podcast or a blog article or something like that. Or even in the electronic space, moving into the world of Kindle books where people can get this on their device, and you now kind of have planted a mind virus in them. Everywhere they go, they're carrying that. And, you know, I'm a guy that a lot of times I actually buy both the Kindle and the hard copy of books because I love the hard copy because now it's never going anywhere. I'll always have it. You can't take it away. You can't delete it. But I can read the Kindle in bed at night with the lights off. So, you know, to do with it, or when I'm at like some like thing that I really don't want to be at, but I had to go to and it's boring, I can pick up my phone and read a book. Anyway, with that, guys, I appreciate you guys tuning in. Tomorrow will be an expert counsel Q&A for the week. Take care. Fortunately, we didn't have any internet outages yesterday. If I seemed a little behind the scenes or off, I guess, or whatever, or a little slow, I did get in with our guest a little bit late today. The internet cut out yesterday. Right toward the end of the show, I was able to get by tethering my phone the best I could. We did not get internet or cable back until almost midnight last night. So a lot of stuff I normally get done, I didn't get done. Because of that, I'm actually thinking, and I'd love to hear anybody that's done this, I'm thinking about getting the Starlink, like the travel one, because it's so cheap, even though they limit your bandwidth, because it would only be a backup. I'm thinking about ordering one of those systems and having that just so that if something like that happens, I have a backup internet. It seems like the best way to go of all the options out there. But if somebody out there in the audience has it, I'd love to hear from you. As always, email me anything, jack@thesurvivalpodcast.com, TSPC in the subject line, and I'll catch you tomorrow with that expert counsel show. They said you should have a house the American way. Dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.